This talk was given by Ron Hogan Green Sensei at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hogan Sensei is a lay teacher in the Mountains and Rivers Order and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. Two things before I begin. One, I want to acknowledge, normally I use a wrapping cloth that is a stately royal blue, restrained, dignified, but I channeled my inner Hojin and found this in the room that I'm using this week to give Daisan, and I thought in honor of her journey, I would use this. Second, usually the Saturday talk, the advice or instruction given is for it to be uplifting and light, and this is probably not going to be that. But we'll see. Case 36 in the Book of Equanimity. Master Ma is unwell. The introduction. Even investigating beyond thought, ideation, and perception, there is still this. Even studying in ordinary and holy paths, it's already too exalted. The red-hot furnace spurts out iron barbs. With tongue sword and lip spear, it's hard to open the mouth. Without running afoul of the point, please try to bring it up. The main case. Master Ma was unwell. The monastery superintendent asked, "Master, how is your venerable state these days?" The great teacher said, "Sun-faced Buddha, Moon-faced Buddha." The verse by Tian Tong. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. The mirror faces forms without subjectivity. The pearl in a bowl rolls of itself. Don't you see? Before the hammer, gold refined 100 times. So this is an important koan. And in note of its importance, it's... A student first encounters it early in the Blue Cliff record. And later again in the Book of Equanimity. And then if they take up the koans in the 300 koans that Daito Roshi and Taz Kanahashi took from the Shobo Genzo again there. And it's not, I would say, a particularly challenging koan for an advanced koan student to present and to give some life to in Daisan or Doksan. That's the easy part. The hard part is to take this up in your life. So Master Ma, or Mazu, or Baso in Japanese, left an extensive record, which is very valuable because it was the first time the Chan, or Zen school, was mentioned. His teaching style was characterized as strange words and extraordinary actions, which became the characteristic, of course, of what we do here. He's in many koans, some of which you probably know. Mind is Buddha. What is Buddha? Mind is Buddha. Ordinary mind is the way. And he was born in 709 in Shaiswan, so he had good Chinese food. He had 139 Dharma heirs. Among them were Baizong, Yakujo, Nanquan, Nansen, and Layman Pang. So these are familiar names. His lineage eventually led to the Linzai or Rinzai lineage. So the introduction. Even investigating beyond thought, ideation, and perception, there is still this. This is, of course, the fundamental challenge of our practice. Going beyond thought, ideation, and perception, still there is something. Going beyond anything that we know, see, have ideas about, still there is something. Something we hold on to. Sometimes we experience this as a witness to a practice. That's pretty common. People working with the breath often have a sense that they're witnessing their own practice. We can think that once and for all we can do away with that something. But actually, we cannot do away with what we wish was not there. The very effort to do away creates more of the very it you're trying to do away with. Yet even if we've practiced this a long time, still there is this. Even studying in ordinary and holy paths, it's already too exalted. Anything we bring is already too exalted. With tongue, sword, and lip, spear, it's hard to open the mouth. Well, sure. Your tongue is a sword and your lips are pierced, it's hard to say anything. Without running afoul of the point of the koan, please try and bring it up. It's a plea to please see this in your life. So Master Mao was unwell. He was dying. He was on his deathbed. The monastery superintendent asked Master, "How is your venerable state these days?" And the great teacher said, "Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha." The terms sun-faced Buddha and moon-faced Buddha are from the Buddha name scripture, which I've never heard of, but that's where it comes from, I'm told. The sun-faced Buddha is eternal, unchanging, not subject to cause and effect. The moon-faced Buddha is one day of life. In other words, it's the five skandhas. It's you. So Master Ma's answer merges the absolute and the relative. I feel great from the perspective of the absolute point of view, and I feel lousy from the relative point of view. I'm dying. And yet, with these points of view, the encompassing of sun-faced Buddha and moon-faced Buddha is a whole encompassing. It's entire. Nothing is being left out. Master Dogen said, commenting on this koan, "You should know that since ancient times, the sun-faced and the moon-faced have never changed. The sun-face comes out together with the sun-face. The moon-face comes out with the moon-face. Yet the sun-face and the moon-face," he didn't say this, I'm saying this, "are not one and not two. In the Heart Sutra, we say form is emptiness, and emptiness is form." And Dogen, commenting on that, says, "Form is completely form, and emptiness is completely empty." It's completely emptiness. Not one, not two. The moon comes out in the evening, the sun comes out during the day, and they never switch around. And yet both the sun and the moon are expressions of the one bright jewel of our being. When you are sick, that is the bright jewel. Our self-centered desires, our small sense of self, does not want to be sick or die. But this great teacher is saying, "I'm okay. My moon-faced Buddha is dying, but my sun-faced Buddha is not bound by life or death." Master Mao's response is complete as the absolute sun-faced Buddha. It is complete as the relative moon-faced Buddha. So how can we, in the midst of our dying, our estrangement, our profound moments of suffering, our little stupid moments of separating ourselves from ourselves and each other, our clumsiness, our anguish, how can we see our sun face whole and complete and our moon face, relative and within the world of things, suffering, desires, happiness, lack of happiness? It's not a casual question. The whole of our life, the entire investigation of our being, our Zen life, if you will, rests on these moments. where we are deeply immersed in our suffering, yet whole within our limitless freedom. My next page was blank, and I was desperately hoping that was just an extra blank page. It was. Where was I? Oh, this is not a casual question. In the opening remarks of Sesshin, I read a poem by Dogen, and just reducing it to a couple of lines, having nothing to depend on and not clinging to any place. Now, he says in the line before, the full moon floating gently above the cluster of roofs. Do you see sun face and moon face in a different metaphor, though? The full moon, cluster of roofs. Having nothing to depend on and not clinging to any place. This koan is not just about facing our death with equanimity and freedom. It's not just about impermanence. It's about your life. Your life here, now. When we struggle with injustice, ours and others, or with ignorance, or out of the created suffering within an institution or society, and respond within the frame of our specific personality and energy and life experience, can we not see just the relative? The injustice, our anger, our demand for something different, but also see and act within the freedom of seeing clearly. The full moon floating gently above the cluster of roofs, having nothing to depend on and not clinging to any place, and not at the cost of the relative reality, but finding the meeting place within us of the wholeness of these two sides as our life. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Lately, I've been reflecting about loss. How, from living and practicing, how I see it, how we see it, how to realize loss, to live as loss, to appreciate it, and to see into the profound solace of that appreciation, both sides of that. I mean, normally we would think of loss as just loss, a negative. But we're missing something. A tremendous opportunity. Maybe the only way that opportunity comes. Recently, someone in residency at the temple said how lonely they were in residency, without their ability to use the peripherals of their life to distract them. And at the same time, they noted that this was exposing just how distracted they were from their life and that they had lived years this way. You know, we tend to create our life in a way that is a perfect setup for us, in the way we want, for the most part of things. Of course, things come along and topple the apple cart, which is the point of this koan. But we try our best and do our best to set it up custom-made for me. Put the order into Amazon and poof, it comes. Pay a little extra, it'll come the next day. Exposed. Just how distracted we can be in our life. We forget. Maybe until the next session. But even in session, we can manage to hide from ourselves. In this investigation, I've been thinking about how Sesshin just lives in me and kind of is iconoclastic and just touches me at a place I can't express. And part of that is the drive home, which is these now 10 years since I left the monastery, 4 hours. And during that drive, I drive home with the people who are closest to me. So I call my sister. I call my stepmother. I call my close friend. This drive is going to be lonely. They're all dead. My close friend is Nenshin, who many of you know, who sat Sushin in his wheelchair right back there between that window and where the Orioki bowls are, facing the wall, and we would pass him in Kinhin, and he was sitting and sitting and sitting. He's been my friend these past years since I left the monastery. We spoke every week, and he continued to do koan study via Skype, and he died 2 weeks ago after a sudden but critical illness. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. He would have deeply appreciated this koan simply because he manifested it in a visible and visceral way as his life. To enter into loss, our loss, personal loss, is to inquire of ourselves, to inquire into the most difficult, the most tender, and terrifying, and beautiful questions. And we are asking in the midst of profound sadness and perhaps confusion, perhaps even anger and a sense of betrayal. And yet we must ask. And so we must look for that is within us, that not just holds the pain, but brings forth our life. We must look for that and bring it forth. And that which comes forth will be a life that is changed. I am changing. You are changing. And this becomes so clear in the face of a grave loss. And even though we may not be able to say how, it is clear that our life is different. And I'm not just speaking of grave loss, but small and larger amounts of loss. So this is Zen practice. It's a practice of loss. I'm not sure I have to say any more about it, but I will. I mean, we all know we're losing with every breath we take. We're losing every time we see a thought. Honor that thought, which is important, and let it go. And come back to our breath. Every time we stand, sit within stillness, and the thoughts permeate us, pass through us, we are losing. Every time the questioning of a koan or mu comes up, and ever so subtly we turn away to a thought, to a fantasy, and let that go and come back, we are losing. And in the process, over time, there's also a loss of innocence, a particular kind of innocence, the naiveness of, you know, the excitement of entering practice, and this is going to change, fix, I hope, my life. You know, I just need to dial it exactly right. I just need to be my breath, be mu. And that naiveness can mature into a deeper perspective as our fantasies about who we are and who we should be become exposed. And that exposure is not fun. And we can spend years in practice safeguarding us from that exposure. And that too will inevitably become exposed, and boy, is that painful. In fact, I think it's safe to say all of us, no matter how long we've practiced, have those areas. I think it's really safe to say that. And the place which we have depended on, another's model of practice, which so easily can become projection and therefore inevitable disappointment when that model doesn't meet our projection, when that becomes visible to us. But we can also use this as inspiration. The using of the helpful, useful qualities of others, the inspiring qualities of others, the remarkable qualities of others that we can adapt for ourselves. When I look around the room at people I've known for a while and know their practice, every one of them inspires me. I steal from you. But don't call me a thief because you're offering it to me. Thank you. Thank you. And seeing our disappointments in others and seeing our projections of others fall flat, can we turn this to our own practice with an open awareness of our places where we limit ourselves? And in that way, seeing others, what we might call insufficiencies from our perspective, becomes an inspiration. We see it, and it inspires us to not do that, to address that. And I might add, this is part of what happens from student to teacher. No one knows the teacher's faults more than the more senior students. And as they have more responsibility to others, to help others, they try and address that. Of course, they bring their own faults, and so it goes. When I feel disappointment in other practitioners, I consciously ask myself, how does what I see manifest in me? And I always find it. So far, I'm batting 1,000. And I'm always hopeful I won't find it. And a few times I haven't, I can't find it. Which is not to say that others should not be held responsible for transgressions. But do not forget yourself. Our practice must rest on a foundation of trust, trust in ourselves, trust in our elders and teachers, trust in each other and the Sangha. And at the same time, must invite us to stand on our own. One of the most important lessons I've learned in my loving another person for 50 years is there is no love without moments of betrayal. Isn't that an interesting lesson? Where does that betrayal come from? The love is real and whole. The betrayal is mine. That probably sounds familiar to some of you. When you are wrong, I too am wrong. When I am wrong, I alone am wrong. That's not original with me. Wei Ning said that a while ago. The betrayal is mine. Looking closely, who is betraying who? Looking very closely. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. Implicit in this is our humanness, our mortality, our disappointments, unimaginable, inevitable, happening now. But the gift of this waking up, the practice of this gift, the wholeness of this gift, is the whole thing. Our relationship as Sangha, as students of the way, our relationship with our teachers and our lovers, is a package deal. If you don't want the package, then leave. If you want the package, it's whole. Your call. It's always our call. There are times to leave, and there are times to stay. That's your call. Life will always bring, in the forms I've spoken of, and in endless others, unique to you, unique to me, deep disappointment. It's inevitable. Pain, illness which we cannot imagine in another, yet are so sensitive in ourself. Mentioned would sometimes say to me, "Hogan, no one really gets what it means to live in a chair, or to be in bed for months at a time." Then he would say, "But you do." But although I did my best, I could not really get it. It was not possible for me to get it. From my relative understanding, I am not in a wheelchair, nor bedridden. Nor am I a person of color, to extend this. I'm not a woman. I'm not gay. I'm not you. And yet, among all the things I'm not, and that's a very abbreviated list, I could list lots more that I'm not. So could you. Among all those things, can there be not a thing between us? When we meet ourselves, stripped down, and I mean to our bones, to our marrow, no, past that, to what I don't even know, stripped down, we support and encourage others to meet us. To meet us in that same way. It's like a mirror, a perfect mirror, reflecting a perfect mirror. And you can't get even a knife's edge in between it, and yet there's enough space for the reflection to be perfect. And so all those things that I'm not are me. And all of me is you. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. This is what we're doing here. Encountering our true self. At first, from the distance that we put between our breath and ourself. But with time and patience and a desire to see our true face, we see more and more of our face. A sun face, a moon face. This is true understanding. And our life reflects that. And that understanding is not encased in empathy or even in the words intimacy or compassion. It just is. It just is. And for each of us, right here and now, there is work to do. So it can be, just is. So in the midst of loss, which face do we see? One, the other, no face, a whole face. There's no map here. There's no place of repair. There's no going back. Can we deeply appreciate how difficult it is to willingly abandon the very picture of ourselves we're clinging to so tightly? The image, the space we've created to feel safe. Not really to feel safe, but to camouflage our fear so we think we can feel safe. We're experts at camouflaging. And the most subtle form of the camouflage is we won't even look. We just suffer, and we won't even look. At this time, when our life does not fall into an easy calculation, when delusions and illusions are being rent by confusion and pain and separation, and the murders. I'm hesitating, but I'm going to bring it in. The real mass murders that have occurred today or yesterday. Just a small number of dead people in a synagogue in Pittsburgh that I know because I lived in Pittsburgh. When our delusions and illusions are being rent by confusion and pain, can we invite our heart's wisdom to come forth? This is not an easy invitation to extend. It's much more comfortable to rest in anger and fear. It's much more available. We know how to do that. To rest in aggression in the name of righteousness. In this practice, we're turning inwards towards a life that does not rest in measured calculation. Again, it's a package deal. It doesn't rest in simple quid pro quo, this for that. I'll give a measured piece, I get back a measured piece. Try that in your loving relationships and see how far that goes. We're asking of ourselves, we're investigating, we're pleading with ourselves. Can we live all of our life and not cut out parts? All of our life. When we cut out parts, there's a profound sadness and it's not balanced by the other side. When we hold the whole thing of ourselves and others, there's a profound sadness, balanced beautifully and perfectly by a profound joy, by a full and open heart. When Master Ma was asked about this, dying, he said so clearly, now put yourself in his bed. Put yourself dying. Dying. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. I spoke to Alex the day after he got out of the hospital and the day or perhaps 2 days before he died. I'm not sure because it's not clear when he died. He died at night in his sleep. He was in the hospital and he was very critically ill. He had a peritonitis, which is often fatal, an infection inside the belly. And he was quadriplegic. That's not a good combination. And even if you're perfectly healthy, nothing good happens to you in hospital. And we got on the phone with each other. And I said, Nenshin, how are you feeling? He said, I'm okay. But I've been through hell. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. This is an absolute love for the wholeness of our life. There's no turning away here. His dying is birthless and deathless. It is dying, but it is birthless and deathless. This is the true teaching of the Buddha. This is the place where we can, in the midst of pain or betrayal or our fear and justified anger, a demand for honor and respect that we need and deserve, that we can become a true lover of profound kindness and heartedness. That's my word. I think you know what it means, heartedness. Each of us in our own time and place, each of us respectful of our individual journey, which demands its respect to open our heart. Only you can do that in your journey. So we say, spoke so perfectly, so well-framed about that journey, about how it is ours and cannot be anybody else's. And yet here we are together. And we share it, one side, and it's all yours, the other side. And it's not a journey that is accomplished. It's a discovery. It really is a discovery that's both astounding and beautiful. And it scares the shit out of us. That journey in the midst of not understanding, of not possessing, in that journey, we can be more alive in our dying than any time in our life. It's inconceivable. It's absolutely inconceivable. And we don't have to wait to our dying moment. Tiang Tan's verse, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. And then he, I think it's him, comments, stars fall, thunder rolls. If you look right at it, you'll go blind. What kind of blindness is that? The mirror faces forms without subjectivity. The pearl in a bowl rolls of itself. Even if you try and grab it, it won't hold still. That's the comment. Try grabbing your zazen. Try grabbing your life. It's not going to hold still. Try grabbing the good. Try grabbing what we call the bad. You can force it, seemingly, to hold still. And then you're dead. Dead while you're alive. Don't you see, before the hammer, gold refined 100 times? And the comment is pitchers, bowls, hairpins, rings, coins, cups, dishes. Under the scissors is silk from one loom, quilts, covers, clothing, hats, vests, collars, sleeves, all gold refined 100 times under the hammer. The hammer is our practice. The gold is your awakening, which is already fully present and just needs to be seen into. Amidst the sadness and the confusion, the door opens. The opportunity beckons. May not feel great at the time. Probably won't. What is Nenshin's gift to me and you? Think about that. Think about your Nenshin in your life and what that gift is. I think about my dead birth mother who died when I was 2 and I have no memory of. What is her gift? Her gift is me sitting right here in this monastery with my life given to me. How do you repay that? So in our living and dying, is this life sun-faced? Is our face that of the moon? There are many questions, but only one place of our life. One place of our life. Don't be confused. Such a place has never existed, nor not existed.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.